on in, pull up a chair, and join the other guys. An irrelevant look at gaming news, reviews, and geek culture with your hosts, Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller.
Well, hello. I am Jeff McAleer, the grand poobah, I guess I would say, of thegaminggang.com.
And I am Elliot Miller.
Yes, he is.
Thevoiceofe.com. And we know a lot of stuff about games.
Yes, we kind of do.
I guess we should mention probably that this is the original podcast known as The Gaming Gang in its new updated version.
I'm glad you didn't say improved.
New and improved. Now with Retson.
I knew you were going to say Retson. I knew it. It's like two shows in one. But yes,
exactly.
Some folks out there listening will probably remember Elliot and I from a few years ago with the Gaming Gang podcast. Gosh, we did that for a couple of years.
That we did. Yes, it was so entertaining. I mean, I was entertained anyway.
Yeah, so was I. But that doesn't necessarily mean our listeners were. For folks who aren't familiar with our style, it's very, very kind of conversational. We're talking about games and that. It's not brain surgery. No one's going to die if we mess something up. And we try to be as family friendly as possible. But I do point out that maybe you'll hear a word that you would hear on like network TV after the family hour. I'm not saying HBO. I'm not saying Showtime. I'm saying like ABC.
Like Bronn from Game of Thrones?
Yes, right. Exactly. I'm going to just drop F-bombs left and right. I'm going to carpet bomb our listeners with F-bomb.
It's always good on the first show.
Always. Yes, we're not a morning zoo kind of thing, and then we're also not NPR. The boys are back in town. There you have it. And I believe, Elliot, your website is voiceofe.com. Didn't you say the voice of E? You are the voice of E, but I thought the website is voiceofe.com.
That's true. It is voiceofe.com.
Right.
Where you should go right now.
In fact, turn this podcast off. Stop listening. It's just going to rot your brain. Go to voiceofe.com. Don't go to thevoiceofe.com because you'll end up getting probably
the voice.
Or a website not found. They're like, what's this guy talking about? He doesn't even have a website. Who are these clowns? Anyway, so why don't we move on to a bit of the news?
All right, I'll pull the first one here.
Thank you for the teletype sound effect. I was going to actually overlay one. You've been working on
that. Why bother?
On those lines for hours. No, it's not right yet. Hang on. Oh, damn it. No, hang on. All right, what do you got for me?
Here we go. Noosefjord board game to debut at Essen from Mayfair Games. Yes, with an MSRP of $70, it is a worker placement and development game for 1 to 5 players, and it takes 2 to 100 minutes to play. That is quite a range of minutes, I must say.
Right, so...
It boils down to 20 minutes per player, I guess.
So how is it 2?
What?
You said it takes 2 to 90 minutes to play.
No, 20 to 100 minutes. I'm sorry.
I swear, I could have swore I heard 2. And I'm thinking, wow, that really is an incredible time range.
2 minutes. Okay, roll your dice. Oh, you lost.
No, better yet, it's just set up the game and then put it right back in the box.
Yeah. It's for ages 12 and up. Today, Noosefjord is a tranquil fishing village in the Lofted Archipelago in northern Norway. 50 years ago, business was booming when the codfish would come for spawning.
And it only took them 2 minutes to do it, too.
Oh, they're done. Game's over.
Right.
But travel back in time and Noosefjord is completely transformed. Sailing ships dominate the fjord, and the rocky beauty of the island is masked by fast forest. Did I say fast?
Fast.
Vast forests.
Well, visit it's fast, them. Too. You got to get this game in under 2 minutes, so... That forest is going to be awfully fast.
It's quite the filler game. Well, you know, that game's over. let's play zombie dice.
Yeah, let's look for a meteor experience and play zombie dice.
As the owner of a major fishing company in Nusfjord, your goal is to, your goal is to develop and expand the harbor and surrounding landscape.
And hopefully you'll be able to rename the town.
From Nusfjord to Oldsfjord. You will do this by using your workers to help you develop your fishing community. Persuade village elders in the council to join you and build buildings for valuable effects and victory points. Plus, don't forget to expand your fishing fleet to increase your fishing capacity and issue shares in your company for a quick gold or two. Because who couldn't use a quick gold or two?
Everybody could.
Exactly.
Especially these days.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why I go to sell your gold here for all my spare gold I have laying around. Dot biz. That's not real. That's imaginary.
Okay.
You also need to balance the clearing and reforesting of your land for building resources. And don't forget the ever-important gold needed to buy shares, which can earn you additional fish and points. In the end, the player with the best fishing company and the most points wins the game.
Nice.
That's coming from Mayfair Games.
Sounds very, very Euro-y.
Yeah, it's definitely very Euro-y. I'm sure it is. Nusfjord.
Nusfjord. Now, Elliot, you didn't think Fantasy Flight Games was just going to acquire the Legend of the Five Rings license and simply release a living card game, did you? Did you?
I did. I had it written down in my predictions for Fantasy Flight Games releases for Legend of the Five Rings.
Well, of course, that was their big Gen Con release. But they have also revealed Battle for Rokugan is on the horizon. And 2 to 5 players are going to try to lead their clans to the most dominant position in the eyes of the Emperor. One thing I do want to point out, taking a look at Battle for Rokugan, it does look awfully similar to Fantasy Flight Games' A Game of Thrones board game. But you're getting L5R action, and the MSRP of the L5R game is actually $20 less than the Game of Thrones game, so it's $39.95.
Wait, so this has nothing to do with the Roku that I have on my television, correct?
No, it would only be if somebody came in and they stole your Roku.
Oh, wow.
Because then
well,
your Roku would
happened.
Be gone.
Roku gone.
There you go.
I get it.
A battle cry went up from the enemy line, and the wave of enemy infantry rushed forth to meet them. She looked to her forces and shouted at the top of her lungs, her horse rearing beneath her, "Steel yourselves, soldiers, for the Emperor, for Rokugan!" In the early days of the Emerald Empire, 7 honorable clans battle for dominance over the rich land of Rokugan. Only one can rise above their rivals and become the leader of the realm. Designed by Tom Jolly with Molly Glover, Battle for Rokugan is a game of conquest and mayhem that turns 2 to 5 players into the mighty daimyos. Remember we used to argue about how the hell you pronounce that?
Yeah, I know. Wasn't it daimos?
Yeah, it could be. It may be daimos. Okay, those Japanese leader sort of guys who must use their strength, cunning, and strategy to gain control of the region and bring honor to their clan. Lead your people to glory. The land is yours for the taking.
The power is yours.
That's right.
Rokugan.
Magical. Yeah, there you go. So they're playing some of those like late 70s, early 80s toy soundtracks. Dun, dun, dun. G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe was
real
there.
American hero.
God, yeah.
Yo, Joe's. Well, you were
people,
the guy
people
who was,
are like saying, who the heck is G.I. Joe?
I don't know. I saw that movie G.I. Jane. I don't know what they're talking about here. All right, what else we got?
Greater Than Games announces Legends of Sleepy Hollow.
Aha, yes, I know about this one.
Legends of Sleepy Hollow is Greater Than Games' newest game from the creative minds of Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle. No relation to Tom.
Riddle me this.
Creators of the best-selling Fleet, Eggs and Empires, and Wasteland Express Delivery Service. Wasteland Express Delivery Service?
Yeah.
Okay. I have not heard of the Wasteland Express Delivery Service.
I have not played it. I have seen it.
When it absolutely, positively has to get there radioactive.
Right.
Unfold the tale of the mysterious disappearance of Ichabod Crane through the eyes of four Terrytown residents who have strange ties to the supernatural in an ever-darkening Sleepy Hollow. Oh, I'd love the soundtrack. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
In Legends of Sleepy Hollow, players take on the roles of four residents. Undertaker Jeremiah Pinchke. Sorry. Minister
Ow,
Elijah
you Pinchke'd me.
Ow. Revolutionary War veteran Matthias Garreau and Tanner Emily Van Winkle, probably Rip's granddaughter, I'm guessing.
Very possible.
In a cooperative miniatures-based campaign game full of secrets and twists. During the game, players will use an action pool to move about, investigate, interact with their environment, or unleash powerful attacks and abilities that are unique to each character. Once selected, however, these abilities will be unavailable until that character's action pool has emptied, a process that becomes more complex as that character gains fear.
No,
players will have to work closely together to overcome their fear, unravel the mysteries of the Glen, and become the true Legends of Sleepy Hollow. Greater Than Games LLC will kick off the Legends of Sleepy Hollow crowdfunding campaign October 17th, 2017 on Kickstarter.
What? It's not a game we can go buy already? Gee whiz.
Nope, sorry.
Just in time for Halloween, we're launching this Kickstarter.
Right.
For this horror game.
Plan ahead for next summer.
Right. Nothing says summer like Sleepy Hollow.
That's right. And also a retail pledge option will be available. For all you retailers listening, and you know who you are, come on.
Well, okay, fine. You want to tease people with a Halloween game?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give people a real Halloween game that's actually going to be out this October.
My God, man.
That's right. Plaid Hat Games will be releasing a cooperative card game set in the Dead of Winter universe. Simply entitled Raxxon, it's R-A-X-X-O-N, a shadowy fictional pharmaceutical company assisting.
Oh, I remember the commercial. Raxxon. Raxoff.
Yes, yes, yes. You're not being that original. All these people I've seen have been commenting on that, same thing. Anyway, the game drops 1 to 4 players into the opening days of the zombie apocalypse. And those players are going to be tasked with saving uninfected citizens. And you'll have to use cunning and a healthy dose of luck in order to shuttle folks to safety before either Raxxon achieves too much power or the dead overwhelm the living. Raxxon's for ages 14 and up, plays in about 60 minutes, and will carry an MSRP of $39.95. But wait, there's more.
There's more.
You'll even receive 2 bonus survivors for use in Dead of Winter.
Oh, really? They're kind of roping in the Dead of Winter fans. Well, I guess the whole Dead of Winter theme does that as well.
Right.
So that kind of makes sense, I guess.
Of course. So I have taken a peek at some of the images that are out for the game, and it does look pretty cool. Because what you're trying to do is each of the players are assisting in this evacuation. So you have to try to find healthy survivors and try not to have infected survivors because you'll need to either quarantine them or
murder them.
Well, I was going to say eliminate them. Plaid Hat is actually even set up kind of this phony pharmaceutical company website at myraxxon.com.
Seriously?
Seriously.
That is funny.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool myself. I went and checked it out.
That's cool. All right. I'm going to have to check it out. Plaid Hat, you know.
I'm not making you do anything. I'm going to have to do this
now. You say that now.
Sure, when we're on the record.
Play this game.
Or else.
Or else. All right. Well, my final story is from my old friends, Fantasy Flight Games, who, of course, provide 57 pages of description. But I'm only going to talk about 56 of them.
Hey, wait a Fantasy second. We already gave them a news piece. We're giving them two?
Two, yes. Two. Two pieces in one.
Okay. All right.
Is proud to announce the Star Wars Destiny two-player game, which is now available in celebration of Force Friday 2, which was
on Friday.
Friday, yeah.
Right.
Exactly. The Star Wars Destiny two-player game puts you in an epic battle as Kylo Ren and Captain Phasma. It's Phasma, right? Phasma? Oh, yeah. I'm going to go with Phasma.
Okay.
Challenge heroes Rey and Poe using the fast-paced and easy-to-learn Star Wars Destiny system. The first player to deplete the health of their opponents through melee and ranged attacks wins the game. The Star Wars Destiny 2-player game features two 23-card decks, rules, and all the resource, shield, and damage tokens needed to destroy everybody, allowing you and a friend to begin playing almost immediately. Not immediately, though, but almost.
Well, yeah, you have to read the rules first.
Yes, yes. That's always the downfall of all games.
The rules?
Having to read rules. Why can't they just be implanted into my head? The Star Wars Destiny 2-player game features a mix of previously released Destiny cards and brand new characters, upgrades, supports, battlefields, and events. These brand new cards include events and characters inspired by Star Wars The Last Jedi. A little side note here. Did you hear that people now know the entire plot of Star Wars The Last Jedi because...
Yeah, I released it online.
It was you! Were you the Game of Thrones guy too?
No. I don't watch that. I'm too busy watching reruns of Mannix on MeTV.
Mannix in color.
Thankfully, yes. Inglorious 480p.
Tops, I guess, their card set from The Last Jedi.
Yes.
It's got a card that explains the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah, right. And I had actually heard earlier in the week, people were online talking about how they had a feeling that that was going to happen with Tops. That if you got their cards, their whole set of The Last Jedi cards, you would actually know the story and everything before the movie comes out.
Yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
Somebody wasn't thinking with their brain.
No, usually ahead of these things. Anyway, the 23-card villain deck features new versions of both Kylo Ren and Captain Phasma. Kylo Ren, Tormented One, costs 14 points for his regular version or 17 for an elite.
What if I get the super whiny version? How many points is that going to cost me?
Those are free, actually. They just can't accomplish much. With three sides showing melee damage, this version of Kylo Ren can act as your primary damage dealer while also providing a disrupt and resource side. Kylo's special ability is the twist. Come on, baby!
I was going to say, what?
Let's do the twist. Is a twist on his Awakening's counterpart, letting you choose a color as you activate him and then looking at a random card in an opponent's hand. If the color of the card matches the color you named, you deal two damage to a character.
Oh my goodness.
I know, two. Not only does this let you deal damage to a character without using up an action, card, or a die, it lets you get a glimpse of your opponent's hand, letting you know if they have any tricks up their sleeve. Once you've experienced the epic duels of Star Wars Destiny 2-player game, a whole world of Star Wars Destiny awaits. I'm not kidding. A whole universe, probably.
Right. The only thing holding you back is your wallet.
Which shouldn't be a limit to anyone. Let's face it.
There's not real gamers out there.
A second copy of the Star Wars Destiny 2-player game will double your card pool. Somehow
wow.
That makes a lot of sense.
Jeez. So would that become the 4-player game?
Giving you two copies of every card and allowing you to use the elite version of all four characters. Furthermore, booster packs from Awakenings, Spirits of Rebellion, and Empire at War will further expand your collection with characters from every era of the epic saga.
And
yes,
if you get eight copies, you'll be able to have 8 times as many cards.
8 times the fun. The forces of the First Order and the Resistance are clashing. Choose your side and duel with the Star Wars Destiny 2 player game. Who will prevail in the epic struggle of heroes and villains? Only you can decide.
Me?
You.
Oh, wow. Put all that pressure on me? Thanks.
You have to make the call. Choose your side and pick up the Star Wars Destiny 2 player game.
Why are you yelling at me? Pick this up. Get this game. How much did FFG pay you?
I'm still waiting. I'm waiting for my copy of Star Wars Legion to come in the mail.
Uh-huh.
It's just the mailbox has been so empty.
So lonely.
So very, very empty.
My mailbox is so lonely. How much is the two-player game again? Isn't it like $29.95?
It is an MSRP of $29.99, so 4 cents higher than your projections.
I have not played the Star Wars dice game, but my friend Louie out in Phoenix, out in Mesa, Arizona, actually, he's a big fan. Him and his son really dig it. And his son is about, I think his son's like, gosh, like 12 now? He might be older. Sorry. Sorry, Jack.
He's 40.
He's 40. No, he's not that old. But yeah, he told me he really dug it. So I'd actually asked him if he was planning on picking up this new game. And he's like, no, I already got the original. So I'm like, okay. Yeah,
so there. Well, it seems to imply that it's kind of like an introduction into the Star Wars Destiny universe.
Yeah, right.
If you don't want to go, you know, balls out to get the whole thing.
Okay.
I've only got one speed, you know.
That's right. You know, it's just to give you a little taste, like, you know, like a dealer does with heroin. That's just give you a little taste.
Right, with heroin. Okay, I said balls, but now you got to throw heroin into the mix.
And in our final news piece, it would not be a podcast with Elliot and Jeff without some mention of Victory Point Games.
Oh, there you go.
Bringing back memories here. Twilight of the Gods Age of Revelation is now available from my friends at Victory Point Games. The expandable card game completed a successful Kickstarter funding run. I want to say it was back in January. And now it's hitting stores and web stores and, of course, the Victory Point Games website. In the game, 2 to 4 players assume the roles of legendary deities battling for supremacy on Earth. It's for ages 13 and up. Plays in around 30 minutes, and it carries an MSRP of $45. The gods are dying. I swear I just wanted to go, the gods are dying. It's dying. The gods are dying, and the pantheons of deities across the globe are in decline. Belief ebbs from the world, leaving these once mighty legends desperately scheming to collect what scraps of faith remain. Some seize power with naked aggression, commanding...
Naked aggression? Aggression's okay, but, you know, once you go with naked aggression, things kind of get a little weird.
Plus, you get nicks and cuts really easily. It's not good. Anyway, some will seize power with naked aggression, commanding merciless armies from a multitude of nations to convert new believers by force. Others prefer diplomacy, the subtle knife from the shadows, laying traps for the unwary and headstrong. Gods of hearth and field erect well-defended sanctuaries, lashing out violently at those who dare breach their defenses, while figures of shrouded mysticism call forth monsters and legends from the river of myth and time, supplemented by divine manifestations that tear the fabric of reality asunder.
Oh, man.
I hate when that happens. Ah, yes. Had to toss in a Victory Point Games news piece. It would not be a podcast with Elliot Miller if I didn't.
Alan, I'm still out here, buddy. I still would, you know, I'd really like to try out Nemo's War, the newest edition. Call me, pal. Old buddy, old pal.
Your game will be in the mail before Alan's even finished listening to the podcast.
Before the ink is dry on the podcast.
That's right. What do you say? Should we move on to our reviews? We've got a couple of reviews this time out.
That we do, amazingly enough.
Before we move into our reviews, one thing I wanted to mention that we should have probably got to touch on as we began the show, is how we came up with the title, The Other Guys.
And The Other Guys.
The Other Guys. And the reason why we came up with that title is because back when we were doing the Gaming Gang podcast, and my gosh, at one point we were doing it like every week, which was just insanity.
Yes.
People would be on various different websites and things like that. They'd be talking about their favorite gaming podcast, and it would always be The Dice Tower and Game On with Cody and John and some other shows that have kind of come and gone, some of them. And it would be like, oh, yeah, and those other guys at the Gaming Gang. So that's why we're the other guys. So, Elliot, you've got a review for a recent title, I believe, came out at Origins Games Fair from Mayfair Games. Am I correct?
That's true.
I wouldn't lie.
That is so true.
I wouldn't lie about something like that.
Would I kid a kid?
Would I kid a kidder?
And it's on Baron Park. Yes, in Baron Park from Mayfair Games, the players have been tasked with building a new bear park. I have to say, the concept of a bear park, I mean, you go into a park that's filled with bears? Is that really a good idea?
Isn't that kind of a European thing, though?
Well, I'm pretty sure it is. There were two umlauts over one of the letters, so I assume it's European.
No. I'm talking about actual bear parks.
Well, I guess. I don't really know how they work in real life. I'm sure you don't step out and get mauled by bears.
I would hope not.
That probably wouldn't be a great experience for the whole family.
Come enjoy Mauling Park. It's right up there with Murder Park. I love going to Murder Park.
Right. The players have been tasked with building a new bear park. The object of the game is to build the best bear park, as opposed to the worst.
Right.
And that is measured, of course, by victory points. To do this, each player is given their own blank park board. The boards have different symbols on them, and when you cover up any of these symbols with a tile, you get to draw a corresponding tile from the supply board. There are many different tiles included, like animal houses, enclosures.
You mean with John Belushi?
Animal house.
Doodum.
Doodum. Playgrounds, rivers, and toilets. These tiles all have different shapes, and you will want to place these on your turn so that they fit together kind of Tetris style on your board. You'll need to fill up all of the spaces on the board, except the pit, in order to get, yes, the pit is bad, in order to get the coveted bear statue. Placing the bear statue in the pit completes that board for you. Now, each of the tiles has a victory point value listed on them, as do the bear statues. The bear statues will have a descending point value on them, so it's better to finish your boards as quickly as you can in order to get the higher value statues. So, you know, you pick a bear statue, it's the highest value available, and then the next player has to take the next highest and
so on
down the road. And yes, I did say boards. You don't just fill up the single board that you start with at the beginning of the game. The construction crew icon on your board allows you to select a new board to add more park area, you know, to your park.
Right.
So you can have a maximum of four boards, and you can place tiles that cross multiple boards,
which
really helps in case you accidentally, you know, tile yourself into a corner. And I'm going to stop saying you know every 2 seconds, but, you know, I'll get there. Each player begins with one of the starting boards and a single tile depending on the number of players. The tiles are grouped into three different types on the starting board. There's green areas, animal houses, and enclosures. You have to put all of the tiles into their appropriate stack before the game, and the number of tiles in each stack varies with the number of players. This, by far, takes the most time during setup, but really, if everyone is helping it, it's not too bad. You know, you're making all these, like, there's 20 different stacks of specially shaped tiles.
Sure,
and you gotta
right.
stack them all up together.
And if I may ask, these tiles, they're face down, so you only know like the symbol on it and the shape. You don't necessarily know exactly what it is.
No, actually, they're all the tiles in a specific stack are the same.
Okay.
And it's the symbols on your like little player board where you have the park.
Right.
That tell you which tile piles you can pull from.
Okay.
And their basic thing is they have different shapes. Like there's one tile that is shaped like a cross. There's one tile that's shaped kind of like a W.
There's
you
know, one like an L shape because it is very yeah. kind of Tetris-y.
Exactly. It's very much like doot, 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 you know, Tetris tiles coming down. So on a player's turn, they place one tile onto their board, and the first tile can be placed anywhere on the board, you know, except for that pit space.
Right, I was going to say, except for the pit.
Right. And any tiles you place in the game after the first, they have to be connected to an existing placed tile, so they have to touch somewhere. Not diagonally, only orthogonally. Plus, they can't overlap, and they can't hang off the edge of the board.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Unless it's onto an actual other board.
Right, right.
What you're trying to do is not only place your tiles so that you'll be able to fill up your entire board, but you also want to cover up one or more of the icons that are on your board so that you get to draw additional tiles. You draw either one tile or a new board for each icon that you cover up. So there's all these icons on your, you know, starting area board. And when you're placing tiles, you're trying to cover them up so that allows you to draw more tiles. If you don't cover any up, you don't get to draw more tiles. The green wheelbarrow allows you to draw a new green area tile. The white cement truck allows you to draw a new animal house tile, and the orange excavator allows you to draw an enclosure tile. Plus, the construction crew allows you to pick a new board. The boards are all different, so you're allowed to pick one from the top of one of the two stacks of boards that you set up at the beginning of the game. So your choice might actually make a difference. After you place a tile, you draw the new tiles that you're entitled to. You choose and place the highest value bear statue if you filled up every place on the board except for the pit, and then play passes to the next player. If for some reason you have no tile to place, you can pass and you draw a free green area tile, which you can place on your next turn.
Okay.
Play continues this way until one player fills up all four boards, and then the other players get one final turn and the game's over. Everybody adds up all of the points on their boards, and the player with the most points wins. So what I like about Baron Park from Mayfair Games is the
puzzle. As opposed to Baron Park from Fantasy Flight Games.
Right. A completely different game.
Right.
Which has a ton of miniatures that you have to buy separately.
Right. It takes about 3 hours to set up.
Exactly.
All the stacks of decks of cards and that, right?
What I like is the puzzle aspect of the game. Like many app games that people love to play on their phones, you're working towards completely filling in an area in order to end the game. However, it doesn't mean that the player who ended the game will always win, as the points are what determine the winner.
Mm-hmm.
The game is for 2 to 4 players ages 8 and up, but kids will find this more challenging, of course, as they're more likely to put themselves in a situation where there's no way they can finish all of their boards. The tile supplies are limited, and if they run out, then they run out. In your first few games, you might find players competing to get the one-by-one tile toilet to fill up the random spaces on their boards.
Sure.
But once everyone has a little experience playing the game, you'll find you'll run into this less and less. If a player can't make any legal moves because of a lack of tiles, then they're forced to pass until someone else finishes the game. If by chance none of the players can make a legal move, then you just end the game and add up the points to determine the winner. This isn't spelled out in the rules, but it is an official ruling from the publisher.
Ah, okay.
The game is really easy to learn. It only takes 30 to 45 minutes to play. It's a fun family game, and everyone who I played with has a really good time. My 10-year-old had no trouble picking up how to play and started being more strategic after a couple of plays. I don't see kids having a decent chance to win, however, because most adults have a better spatial planning skills, you know, than kids do.
Sure.
But, you know, still she loved playing the game and really concentrated more on making a nice park than worrying about winning. She wanted everything to line up perfectly.
Right, and, you know, sure.
You need this road here and kind of thing like that. But of course, everybody's kids are different. The game also has an expert variant that includes the achievement tiles that also come with the game. There's 10 different types of achievements, and you choose 3 of them to include with the game that you're playing. There's a 4th step added to each player's turn, in which they can claim one of the achievement tiles if they met the requirements for one of them during their turn. Examples include having 3 polar bears in your park, or a cluster of 6 green areas, or 3 food streets in a row, and so on. Achievements give you extra points that are actually listed on the tile. The negatives in the game include the time it takes to set it up, as you have to separate all of the tiles into different stacks at the beginning of the game. The box itself comes with this insert that splits the box bottom into 4 different sections. But I'm telling you, it took me forever to figure out how to put this insert together, despite the little icons on it that describes how to put it together so that I could fit it in the box.
Right.
And there are way more than 4 different types of tiles, so it really isn't a big help. But that's about it for negatives. It's a nice theme, it's fun for the whole family, it's easy to learn, and it plays pretty quick. If your family appreciates a fun puzzle-type game, then they should love Baron Park. Gamers should like it too, as it does have a competitive aspect to it with the limited amounts of each tile. You need to plan ahead if you want to win.
I have just a couple of quick questions. First off, because you had mentioned toilets, I thought bears poop in the woods. Why do you need toilets?
I'm pretty sure the toilets are the people going to Baron Park.
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha.
See, you know, there's not a lot of rabbits running around that you could...
Yeah, I gotcha.
Never mind.
We don't have to go any further than that. So my legitimate question is, because I saw people playing Baron Park at Origins, and I'm not sure, maybe they were playing it differently, but it seemed like everybody was just kind of grabbing stuff off the stacks all willy-nilly. You're saying that you actually, there is kind of a rotation that you go through for people to draw their tiles. Is there some sort of like timing mechanic or anything like that you have to do this quickly? Or is it just, you know, you're going around, everybody's getting there to take their turn?
Well, hell, I've been playing in turns. I don't know what everybody else is doing, but pretty sure that's how it's supposed to work.
Oh, I'm just asking because I remember, in fact, I think I had even commented to you at Origins. I said, yeah, that looks real hectic. I mean, it's just everybody was just kind of grabbing tiles and things like that. So I don't know. I haven't played it. I can only go by what I saw from peeking over people's shoulders.
No, there's definite turns in the game. And, you know, you get to place your tile and then pull the tiles for the spaces that you covered up.
Right.
Maybe if people are trying to play a faster version, you know, that's on them.
It's speed, Baron Park.
Right. Everybody go! It was a pretty neat game. It's surprising to me how much it strikes me like Tetris, because when was the last time anybody played Tetris? But
no, I'm sure there are people still out there playing some sort of Tetris.
But it is kind of neat trying to figure out how to make all of your boards fill up completely. These toilet tiles are the only tiles that are, you know, like 1 by 1 square.
Right.
So they're perfect for filling up those, oh, crud, I left one tiny space on the board that I can't possibly fill up, so I'll toss a toilet in there.
Right.
But they do run out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, sure, that's one of the things that if you've played a couple of times, you can plan around that, and as you get better, you use less and less of those toilet tiles.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, it was fun. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, well, obviously, you've only talked about it for like an hour and a half.
A 357-minute podcast.
Well, my review is of a game that has been out for a bit of time. I believe it came out around January of 2016. there's kind of a funny story about how Elliot and I both actually got review copies of this game. We were at Gen Con and the exhibit hall was closing in about 30 minutes or so. We're carrying around these various different review copies of games that we got, and they're all like these big, massive, epic games for, you know, four players, or games where we were like, oh man, we'll end up spending the whole night reading the rules before we get into
this. Exactly, exactly. And we needed something simple.
Right, or something we could jump into rather quickly.
Exactly.
And I'm not knocking epic games. I love epic games. But like for myself, I had a lot of games that were like, you know, with minis and stuff like that. So anyway, so Elliot's talking about, well, what about this game? What about this game? What about that game? And we were kind of going back and forth. And then Elliot's like, well, who makes Tiny Epic? Who makes those Tiny Epic games? And I was like, off the top of my head, I don't know. I've heard really good things about them. So, of course, it's Gamelin Games, and we go over to their booth, and it was pretty funny because we walk up, and it's almost as if they're not selling anything. Remember?
Right.
There's like nothing.
Because there's like almost nothing on the table.
Right.
Because they've sold out of everything.
And that's what it was. They had sold out of all their, all pretty much all their stock. And trust me, this was not Sunday. This was not the last day.
Nope.
They did still have Tiny Epic Western. And interestingly enough, we started talking to a gentleman there at the booth. And here it turned out it was Michael Coe, who I had interviewed, gosh, in 2012 at a at Volcon in Phoenix.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny because Elliot says, my gosh, man, only you could go to a booth for a company we just pulled out of a hat, basically. And somehow, you know, the guy who's there.
Exactly.
So we did pick up Tiny Epic Western, and it is a small footprint game. It's in a pretty small box. It's a game for 1 to 4 players. There actually is a solitaire mechanic available to it, which is actually pretty cool. I played the solitaire, and it holds up very well. And with Tiny Epic Western, what you're looking at is every player is a boss in, obviously enough, the Old West, and you're trying to become pretty much the most powerful person in this town, and you're looking to gain victory points. You do so in 3 different ways. One is by mainly owning buildings. Various buildings that you'll have an opportunity to buy are going to give you victory points. Then you also have effectively the stock market. There are 3 stocks that the players will try to manipulate in order to be the largest shareholder, thus getting the most victory points. And then the final way you get victory points is there's a wanted card, because there's dueling in this game, and the person who won the last duel gets the wanted card, which gives them a bonus during the game, but also gets
two
victory points at the end of the game. Correct.
Yep.
So Ellie and I played the 2-player game, and I've also played solitaire, and I've played with 4 players, and
I thought it was hilarious the way we played this 2-player game, because we sat, what, in the stairway?
Well, it wasn't really a stairway. It was kind of under a flight of stairs in the Indianapolis Convention Center.
Yes.
Because we normally will go and grab a table in, it's not really open gaming, but in what is it, like Hall C&D?
Mm-hmm.
Normally we're able to find a table by like 10 o'clock or so. Nobody really cares what you're playing at one of the tables. They're not usually running events and stuff like that. It was a little earlier than 10, but we couldn't find a table. And looking around, where in the world can we park our butts to play this game? We played a little bit. We were still kind of wrapping our heads around the rules and all. And then we went back to the room and we played a full game, full 2-player game there.
I have to tell you, though, the funniest thing was when we would step out and I would have a vape, you'd have a smoke. And so we'd leave all the stuff sitting there at the top of this staircase.
Right.
Underneath the other staircase. So we're way off from anybody. But people would still show up. And we're standing outside and we're looking in.
Right, because we can see it sitting there set up, right.
And people would come by and then they'd stand there and they'd stare at the game for like a minute. This game that's just set up on the floor.
Just sitting there.
Surrounded. I had some, you know, nachos sitting next
right,
to it.
Right.
And my soda.
Right.
And they just stand there and then they kind of look around and you could just see their wheels turning in their head, you know?
Not all of them, though. I think some people were just kind of curious, why is this game just sitting there?
Yep.
As opposed to, can I steal this?
But, you know, not a single person, attempted to, jump down there and grab our game.
No, or touch it or anything. They just kind of looked at it like,
what the heck is this?
What's going on? Right. And they never looked out the door.
Or they would have standing, 10 feet away.
Or they would have seen us looking in.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Just goes to show the kind of people at Gen Con, which we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to wrap up the show talking a little bit about Gen Con. But as far as with Tiny Epic Western, it's got a cool little layout. So you've got four different buildings that represent, they're kind of the player's mat. They're kind of the player's building. So you've got the courthouse, the saloon, the hideout, as well as the bank. Now, there are also two other locations. One is the sheriff's office and the town hall. So the players don't really control the town hall or the sheriff's office. What'll happen is each of the players will have their own character. And there's all different kinds of characters. There's the gunslinger, the outlaw, the rancher. There's the saloon entertainer, and so on and so forth.
I believe that was the cowgirl.
The first time. And then when we played the full game, you were the scout.
Yes, yes, yes.
And each one of these bosses have special abilities. They're all unique. Some are much more effective and worthwhile to have than others, which I'll get to in just a moment. But you'll have your character, and then on the character, you also have a couple of spots where you'll place your posses. They're basically meeples, because this is, in essence, a worker placement game. So you've got your two little posses who you're going to be able to use every round. But you also have a third posse who actually lays down. And there's different ways that you can bring that third posse into play. And that third posse really gives you a leg up on everybody else, because in essence, when you're placing your posses, you're putting these down, and that's going to determine what you might get. What you'll do also is on your player mat, your character mat, you have three different resources. You've got money, force, and law. With your...
Use the force, Jeff.
Yes.
Let go of your feelings.
I did. That's how I won that game we played. I did it all through force.
False.
In each of these locations, you'll also have a building that's available to purchase, except at the town hall, and the starting buildings that have players. So, say, in a four-player game, you'll not have any active building on it, because there's two ends to the building. One is where a building that can be purchased is placed, and then the other, there's a porch area where when that player owns a building, these buildings also have special abilities that you can utilize. And it's not just the player who owns it, it's whoever places their posse in that spot. There's different things where you can get wild resources. So you can get resources like money, you can get force, you can get law, you can get a choice of, they call it wild, so you actually get to choose it. One of the interesting aspects, too, is with many of these locations, you have an option. Do you want to take the immediate benefit, or do you want to try to beat the rival in a hand of cards in order to get a better payout?
Lousy rival.
Yes. Who everyone plays against. The nice thing is if you choose the resolution option, because one's instant, one's resolution, if you win that hand of cards, you end up getting way more than you could possibly get just by going with the instant. So for an example, like the hideout, if you went for an instant, you get one money. If you go for the resolution and you win that hand of cards, you actually get two money plus two fours. So way, way better payout than you could possibly get just by going with the instant. One of the aspects I really kind of dig with Tiny Epic Western is as you're placing your posses, you start running out of, you don't necessarily completely run out of spaces that you could put your posse, but you find that you have to duel other players because you want that space that they're on. And dueling is pretty simple. It's just you're going to roll your bullet dice. Every player gets a bullet-shaped six-sided die. And you can also use your card that you have in your hand. I know when we were talking to Michael Coe about this game, he said, well, you know, some people who don't like poker, they don't like card games, probably won't dig this. But I really didn't encounter really all that much of like a poker aspect, because the cards are simply numbered 1 through 5 and there's 4 different suits. So you're looking at, a high card or a pair or 3 of a kind or a straight flush. Aren't a whole lot of different hands that you have to really concern yourself with.
It's true. And I mean, they list what each one is on that little player card.
Right. Because on the back of the boss cards that you're not using, there's actually a player aid card. So everybody's got a player aid card. And then it shows you the hands, and it also shows you the suits. And there's some other items on there as well. So it's pretty easy once you get the hang of it. So to begin, there's spaces between these buildings where you'll actually deal face-up cards. So for an example, let's say we've got the hideout. Well, on each side of the hideout is going to be a face-up card. In front of the town hall is actually a face-down card. When you get your cards, when you're deciding on which card you want to keep, you really have to decide, okay, where am I going to try to put my posse? Because you use the card you keep in conjunction with the 2 cards that are on each side of the building. So for an example, let's say on one side of the hideout is a 1, on the other side of the hideout is a 3, and you have an option of keeping a 4 or a 2, you're probably going to keep the 2 if you really want to get what's on the hideout, if you want to try to get your posse on that location, because you would then have a straight, 1, 2, 3. You probably wouldn't keep the 4. That's how that plays out. Now, as far as the dueling, with the dueling, you roll a die. You can decide if you're the attacker, you can spend force, a point of force, to re-roll if you want to get a higher roll. Or if you're the defender, you can choose to spend a law and re-roll. And then once everybody's satisfied with their rolls, then you flip over your cards you've been hiding and add those to your roll. Dueling's pretty easy. I know Elliot and I, when we were playing it, we were kind of having a difficult time kind of wrapping our heads around the wounded posse. If a posse member loses a duel, he's just knocked over on his side, and he doesn't get the benefits of that spot they were on. And we couldn't figure out, okay, so do they heal for the next round, or are they staying wounded, and so on and so forth. We finally found out, yes, they actually heal at the beginning of the next round, and the game runs 6 rounds.
Yeah, there's not much detriment from losing a duel.
Really. Not really. You're just not getting what you put your posse on that space to get, because you still get to play that hand of cards against the rival to win the pot, because the little extra goodies that you get for being on that location.
Yeah.
With the rival, what happens is everybody's actually playing against the rival in the resolution phase. So that face down card that's in front of the town hall gets flipped up.
Well, isn't it that card plus the 2 cards on each side of it?
Right. The hand that is in front of the town hall is what you're looking to best with the hand that you're making out of the 2 cards on each side of the location where you have a posse.
Yeah.
If you beat that hand, then you get the goodies. If you don't, you don't get anything. But you do get an opportunity to buy a building that's at that location, the hideout or the saloon, the bank, what have you, if you've got a posse there. Even if the posse's wounded, you still are able to purchase a building. Which moves on to another thing, which is how you wrap up the rounds, is buying buildings. And everybody's allowed to buy 1 building, although there are different things. There's on the sheriff's office, there's a spot that you can put a posse, which allows you to actually purchase a leftover building. And there's some of the characters have, some of the special cards if it's an active building. Like there was one we were playing, and it was if you put your posse there, you could spend one of your resources to immediately buy a building.
Yeah, that's right. That was a crazy card.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool card. Normally, everybody's only going to get to buy 1 building. As far as who gets to buy buildings first, now you start to compare your hand differently. You use your card just like the rival did, with the 2 cards that are alongside the town hall. Whoever has the best hand out of the players gets to purchase buildings first. There's also something very important that takes place as well. Winning that portion of the round is that you get to move one of the stocks, either transportation, mining, or the railroad.
Yeah, and that gets pretty important at a certain point.
It does, because these building cards not only have the special ability, they got the victory points, they also show shares of these stocks. There are buildings that have three railroad shares or three transportation shares or two of one kind and one of another. And it becomes very important to be able to move those stocks. So if you've got a majority of the railroad stock, you want that stock to be number one because that stock is going to pay you out the most victory points at the end of the game.
Yeah, and aren't these like different stock types listed at the top of the building cards as you buy them throughout the game?
Right, right. That's what I mentioned. Each of the building cards that you're buying are going to show different stocks. And as you buy more buildings, you actually kind of layer your new building on top of the old building. You lose the special ability that that building had before. You actually just kind of show the stocks peeking out. The stocks that card had. And now the new ability for that building is on your porch. I really dug playing Tiny Epic Western. Really, once you finish your six rounds, all you do is you count up victory points. So you count up the victory points are on your buildings. Whoever's got that wanted card from winning the last duel gets two victory points. And then you look at the stocks. And with a two-player game, it's just whoever has the most stock gets those victory points. They're not worth a ton in a two-player game. I think, if I remember right, I think the number one stock was three victory points, number two was two, and number three was one. With four players, you actually will have like the majority stockholder and the minority stockholder. Whoever has the most stocks, shares, I should say, of that stock, if I remember correctly, I think it's five victory points for the person with the most, and then three for the person with the second most. And then if you came in third with that stock, you get nothing. So it's not a very difficult game to get into. I know we kind of, you know, had to reread the rules a couple of times and look at the FAQ and things like that. But it was just, I think, more along the lines of trying to get our bearings with what we should be doing. Especially with the posse placement, there's a little bit of an opportunity for some analysis paralysis. Especially when you start having buildings on these porches that can now be used.
Right, exactly.
So you're looking around, you're kind of going, okay, well, do I want to put my posse here? Do I want to do this? Do I want to get that? So you can kind of run into a little bit of, I'm a little bit overwhelmed, especially the first couple of times you're playing. Once you got it under your belt, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. I thought that, our first game that we started playing there under the stairs, like Harry Potter.
Under the stairs.
Oh, that was kind of like our learning session. We played a couple of turns and then we're like, well, you know what? Now that we kind of know how to play, because we played like two turns, why don't we head out of here and we'll go play a full game.
Right.
And that's what we did. And it was much more entertaining. And I thought that actually was really close.
I was going to say, it was a very, very close game. Yeah. And the four-player game that we played, same way. Nobody ran away with the game. It plays pretty tight. I would say there's one complaint I really have, and it's with the bosses, with the various different bosses. Now, Ellie and I both got copies. It's their deluxe edition, so there's more bosses in it. There's the four bullet dice, because the standard edition only has two. It's got a kind of a cool plastic transparent wanted poster that you could put on top of your character card. So their face is in the wanted poster. So there's some pretty cool little added goodies to it. Yeah. I think they added these other bosses to the mix and they didn't balance them really well. And the reason why I mention that, for an example, like you'll have the rancher. Well, the rancher can actually spend a single resource, any kind, could be money, force, law, whatever, and he automatically gets that third posse. Normally, the only way you get the third posse is if you are on the sheriff's office and you win that card, the hand of cards. It's an option you can get the third posse, or if you don't buy a building in a round, you get the third posse. So it doesn't happen too often. And you only get to use it. And then once you use it, you lay it back down. You have to do something to activate it again. The rancher just has to spend one resource to get that third posse. Take a look at, let's say, the scout. The scout, if they only have so many resources total, they get three cards to look at when they're first dealt to begin the round. And they can, you know, select one out of those three, as opposed to most of the players only get the two and have to pick one.
Yeah, that was actually a pretty good advantage. I like that a lot.
Right. Exactly. Now, there's others. They get, I can't think of the character off the top of my head, but they get three cards, but only if, I think it's like they have the wanted card or something along those lines. It was something that was rarely going to come up. But then you got the rancher who can sit there and get this third posse all the time.
Yeah, that's a big difference because it's a full action.
Right.
More than all the other players can get, basically,
unless
they have their own posse. Yeah, normally.
Right.
And it's a big advantage, really.
What I would recommend to kind of get around that is allow the players to pick their character. Everybody roll a die, high roller picks first, and that way it's not random because you're supposed to just pick them randomly. Well, great, okay, so so-and-so got the outlaw who gets +2 to their dueling dice, or die, I should say, if they don't have the wanted card. And I got a guy who gets to look at three cards. It's like, wait a second, man. Just to get around that imbalance is to allow the players to pick their bosses before you start the game. I really dug it. I really do think it's an excellent game. We had heard all these good things about Tiny Epic Games.
Yep.
I was very, very, I don't want to say pleasantly surprised.
Well, it was the first one we had really played, you know?
Right. Well, I guess I could say I was pleasantly surprised because I'm not necessarily the biggest Euro game fan out there, but I liked it. Everybody stays involved. There's very little downtime because everybody's, you know, busy dropping their stuff. Everybody's resolving their hands of cards. Everybody's buying, and it just moves pretty quickly. So once
there's so much, it's just such a small box.
Yeah, and
there's so
right.
much going on in there, you know?
That's what I thought was pretty cool, too. I mean, it really lives up to its name, Tiny Epic. I mean, it's a small footprint box, and it's just packed with gaming goodness. I'll go into a little more detail in my written review that people will be able to see over at thegaminggang.com, and I'll give it a numerical score. For the other guys' podcast, we're not going to really do scores. We'll just liked it, this is why I liked it, didn't like it, whatever. Actually, we'll probably not be reviewing stuff we don't like, because why are we going to waste our time doing that? I mean,
right.
It's not like we got plenty of time to be doing podcasts.
Let's talk rowboats.
Yeah, rowboats. Yes. Or that one where, what is it? Excess baggage or something. It's from a few years back, but this was just complete garbage. It was where you actually would get people together and you were just essentially talking schmack about your friends and family to score these little,
which is always fun,
little suitcases that went in a travel cart. Yeah, it was garbage. I think I gave it a 1 out of 10. If I was even that generous. So those are our two reviews for our first time out. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Gen Con before we wrap up. Gen Con 50.
Gen Con. What was that?
What was that? Well, gosh, it did kind of shoot past, didn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
It's pretty That's crazy for sure. Once con season hits, because this year, you and I both did Origins. We did Comic Con in San Diego, and then we had Gen Con. And thankfully, Gen Con was a little later than usual this year, so it gave us a bit of a break. Usually, Comic Con to Gen Con is about 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's really fast. I mean, we don't even have time to finish putting stuff together
from Comic-Con, and then we're shooting out to Gen Con. It was Gen Con 50 just a couple of weekends back, and I was kind of curious, Elliot, what was a game that maybe you had heard a lot of buzz about, but you were disappointed that you didn't get a chance to see?
That I didn't get a chance to see?
Yeah. Because there was so much out there, and then a lot of times after the show, we started hearing what Buzz was about, and we're like, oh man, never even got a chance to check that out.
Well, you know, I didn't go to Buzz.com, but the one game that I wish I had gotten a chance to actually see how it was played was that they've got the new legendary version of Buffy.
Yep, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There were actually two big Buffy releases at Gen Con. Well, I guess the Buffy the Vampire Slayer other game from Jasco.
Well, that's been out
like months ago.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. That's been out. But you, at least you got
but
that.
The legendary.
You picked
yeah,
that up.
yeah, we definitely, I definitely flew through some hoops in order to make sure I got a copy of that, which I will have a review for eventually.
Well, I would hope.
Well, we got a bunch of games to go through.
Yeah, I know. I know, but it's a Buffy game, so I'm thinking that's one that you're probably going, yeah, I really should really want to get this to the table.
Yeah, you know, well, I'm a big Buffy fan.
I know. I
like Buffy.
I know you
a
are.
Lot.
I know.
And
a lot of
you
people
know,
do.
I can spring slip into some Once More With Feeling soundtrack every once in a while. But Upper Deck had their release of Buffy the Vampire Slayer expansion to Legendary.
Right. It was a core game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a core game. Okay. But, you know, they all kind of work together. Not that you would incorporate Buffy into the Marvel universe.
Right,
but,
or Alien or Predator, right.
It struck me just because of the theme. You know, that's one of the properties that they have. And I'm really hoping to get a chance to play that one. But I don't know. It's not on the horizon for me yet. But that was the one that was there that I was upset that I didn't get a chance to try or even talk about.
Aha. Well, for myself, and I think when I mention this, you'll be like, oh, yeah. I really wanted to check out the demo that they were doing at WizKids for the Expanse board game designed by Jeff Engelstein. And I guess Jeff was there running demos and so on and so forth. And I didn't get a chance to even take a peek at it.
Yeah, you know, after you finally convinced me to watch The Expanse.
How many months did I keep telling you, you got to check this show out? It's really good.
Oh, my God. It was months, but I finally watched it, and I was just completely sucked into it. And it was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. And now I'm thinking, okay, now it's over, and I got to wait till next year to see what's going to happen next.
Right.
Oh, God.
Well, you can always go pick up the books or, you know, listen to the audiobooks, but I haven't. I've actually, interestingly enough, I've listened to the audiobooks after only really two novels in.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I haven't listened to anything beyond that because I want to be surprised.
But yeah, like you, I'm really intrigued as to what the Expanse board game could possibly be like. I have no idea.
Well, there is talk that it's a similar kind of, it's three players. It's supposed to have a similar feel as like Twilight Struggle, which I hate when companies or people compare their game that's coming out to an immensely popular or immensely well-loved design, which would, of course, really pique my interest because, of course, you and I are huge fans of Twilight Struggle.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know it's very difficult to get review copies of stuff from WizKid, so I might have to bite the bullet and buy that one.
That's just mad.
Yeah, I guess I'll just have to
space madness.
I'll have to. Yeah, you covet my ice cream bar,
don't you?
The shiny cherry-like button.
Do you think anybody will get a Ren and Stimpy reference at this
point?
Oh,
I'm sure two people just got it. After you said Ren and Stimpy, they're like, oh, that's what that was from.
Stimpy, you fool!
For you. Anyway, last thing I wanted to say about Gen Con, it is my favorite convention, and I look forward to it every year. I have a blast. Don't get me wrong. Everybody knows I enjoy the conventions and that, but Gen Con's just different. Gen Con's just got a different vibe. Everybody's there. They're having a great time. You never see people arguing or fighting, or not to say that there's brawls at the conventions, other conventions
nice
we go to.
Were fairly rare.
Right. I'm getting that exclusive Comic-Con t-shirt.
You know, I gotta tell you, it was interesting because this was the first one where the entire convention center was surrounded by those signs that said,
sold
Gen Con
out.
Badges are sold
right.
out. You know, so go away unless you have a badge
yeah,
at this point.
I don't know if that's necessarily what they were trying to tell people, but yeah.
Well, that was implied.
Well, right. Know, it was, well, it was saving people the hassle of going in and trying to buy a badge because they were all gone.
Well, exactly. I mean, they can only legally limit how many people can get into that
right.
Exhibit hall.
Yeah, right. The fire marshal has the call on that.
Exactly. Before they start hosing crowds down with those giant hoses, washing them down pressure. The street.
I'm talking about how cool everybody is and how everybody gets along. And now you're like unleashing fire hoses on people like they're rioting. How dare you be out of Starfinder?
What did you think of that, kid?
There's no Starfinder. I bought my Friday badge to get Starfinder. Damn you, Paizo.
Oh, my God. How about Paizo selling all of Starfinder on the very first day?
That's what I'm joking about, the rioting. They would have to break out the fire hoses. Yeah, that was pretty wild. That was pretty crazy within the first few hours. And they had printed up more copies of that than anything they had ever printed.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that next time they might think of limiting to it a certain amount per day.
Right. Kind of go the direction
that my suggestion.
Like Comic-Con, a lot of the exclusives, once they sell out for the day, there's still more coming, but you got to go get in line the next day. So, yes, I agree. I would have thought they would have done something like that, but it just took them by surprise. Part of the problem may have been that they were allowing people to buy multiple copies. Maybe if they had said, okay, only one copy per purchaser, then maybe they would have been able to stretch it out a little further into the con, as opposed to they're all gone. Because I forget the gentleman that you did an interview with at Paizo.
Jason Bowman.
Right. Jason had mentioned that people were buying a bunch of copies. Like they were buying copies of the rules for like everybody in their group, in their gaming group.
Everybody on eBay.
Hey, I guarantee you there were some copies going up on eBay.
Yep.
Because those were long gone.
Well, what did you think of the museum that they had there at Lucas Oil Stadium? This was the first time we got to go into Lucas Oil Stadium for some Gen Con stuff.
Well, it was the first time we went on the field. Last year, they did have stuff going on over in Lucas Oil. And there was nothing going on
the
field.
Right?
I don't know. But I'm...
Come on in! You gotta take a leak. This is the time to go.
I could have swore that they actually had True Dungeon over there back in 2016.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't remember.
I think they had like the anime area over there and stuff last year too. But I thought it was very cool. And I know you've got a video up. I guess that's what you're segueing into. You're just trying to get a plug in there for your video.
I was completely not plug-in related. I was just trying to talk about it because I really thought it was cool to see all that stuff in the different cases. I mean, printouts from like the first Gen Con and
right. There were like old copies of the General magazine. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that really kind of drove home, oh my gosh, I have owned so many games over the years, and of course 95% of them are long gone, 99% probably, was all the different stuff that we were taking a look at, and it was like, oh my God, I had that. Oh, I had that. Oh, remember yes. that? And it's kind of funny. I was standing right with you for a lot of the time you were shooting the video. I guess viewers are going to overhear us going, oh, I had that. Oh, my God. Remember playing that?
Yep.
I thought it was cool.
Pretty much.
And I'm pretty sure that was just for this year. It was for the 50th Gen Con that they did this museum.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they bring it back in the future because I think it went over pretty well.
I think so. Let's not go overboard. It wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to a museum. It was some pretty cool displays and stuff, yeah. But as far as I understand, it wasn't Gen Con who did that. It was a group, a gamer group or something like that, because I know first draft of D&D and stuff that was like handwritten and things like that, those were all just on loan from collectors.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I assume that. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was great. It was awesome.
Then I threw that 50-yard pass and you went off into the end zone.
That's right. And then Andrew Luck got pissed because he was like, what is this guy trying to steal my job? And he came over and he clocked you.
Oh, yeah. That was painful, but worth it.
Well, you know, and that was pretty low, man. He cold cocked you. You didn't even see it coming. It was like, come on, man. Although you shouldn't have shattered his knee with the baseball bat. That's all I got to say.
Good old Lucy. I carry her around everywhere.
Right, Lucille. Well, you know, I had to take the barbed wire off of it for the show. They wouldn't let me bring it around with the barbed wire.
Right. I have to keep going through that inspection, which was such a pain.
So just to wrap things up, because I know you're like, we don't want to do like an hour and a half first time out. And of course, we're probably clocking in at about 90 minutes at this point. Any final thoughts about Gen Con you want to toss out there?
I have to admit, even though it was more crowded than anyone I've been at before, I really had a good time at this one. Not that I didn't have a good time at the previous ones, but it just seems to keep getting better.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Year. I always have a blast. One of the big things that I really love about Gen Con, and you know, I've talked off the record, you and I, about this umpteen times over the years. I love how you get all these different people and you find that, you know, there's different people who have, you know, physical challenges and so forth and stuff like that. And you know that life can't be too easy for many of these people. Not to say life is easy for anybody. I'm just saying they've got a worse hand dealt to them than, like, say, you or I. And I'll be damn, man. Those folks, they're in there. They're having a great time. Everybody's part of a community. Nobody's like, oh, you know, that person, they like miniatures games. I'm not talking to them. Oh, they love 4th edition D&D. Oh, no, I don't want... No, there's none of that. Everybody is just one big community and everyone fits in. And I kind of get teary-eyed. And you've seen it. I get teary-eyed when we leave Gen Con every year. Because I know that whole kind of feel-good... belonging, sense of belonging that many of us have going to Gen Con, it's not something that we get to enjoy all year round.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, unlike me, where I go through and I determine I have to crush any player who gets in my path.
Correct.
Mercilessly.
Right.
It's really such a community, and it's so much fun, even more than most of the other conventions that we go to.
Right, right. And I'm sure there's people who've had bad experiences. The people that you've crushed probably have not had the greatest experiences at Gen Con. So, I mean, I'm sure they're out there, but for the vast majority of us, there's not a bad word you can say about the convention.
Right. I must break you.
I must break you. Well, at least...
Remember when I allowed you to place that last meeple? I lied.
You crush them, but you do it with a smile on your face. Kind of like the 12-year-old kid who destroyed you in that Magic the Gathering tournament years and years ago. Jeez. Up in Milwaukee at Gen Con.
I'm sorry, you lose.
That was like the only words that ever came out of the kid's mouth to you.
Right. Pow, pow, pow.
Bam, 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 bam. It's like, oh, okay, well, guess I'm done playing this.
Yeah, let's see. I think I'll go crochet for a while.
Anything else? Any final words before we mosey on out?
No, not at all, except for everybody make sure to go over to thevoiceofe.com and check out the Voice of E channel on YouTube, where I do video versions of all my reviews, and they're quite thematic because I dress up in silly costumes and play silly games.
So you're not going to do a plug?
No, not at all. That was just fact.
All right. So once again, I will point out that Elliot Miller's website is voiceofe.com. Please do not go to thevoiceofe.com because you're not going to find Elliot there. Well, since you're tossing that out there, be sure to come and visit thegaminggang.com, where I am the wearer of many hats.
Right. I love your hat videos. Those are some of my favorites.
That's right. I don't know why I came up with a name like The Gaming Gang, because it's just about hats. All right. Well, once again, I am Jeff McAleer.
And I am Elliot Miller.
And until the two of us knuckleheads get together for another podcast, be sure to visit our websites. And you'll actually be able to find this podcast on both websites. So if you like what you heard, comment. If you hated the show, do us a favor. Keep it to yourself.
Right. I don't want to hear about it.
I don't want to hear about it.
I have crap going on.
Right. Please don't crush us. Like Elliot crushes everyone who gets in his way.
I must crush you.
All right. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Yep. Thank you.